Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hello, it's Kitty Martone, healthy gut girl. This is stuff your doctor should know. I'm coming to you live from deep inside your small intestine. Wait a minute. I meant to say large intestine because your small intestine is meant to be pretty sterile, and I have no business in your small intestine. So actually, I'm in your large intestine, and guess who I have back today? Guess what guest I have back today? I'll give you three guesses. It's Morley Robbins. He has graciously reminded me that this is the sixth time that he has been on my show, and of the six episodes, this is definitely my favorite. He breaks down a lot of awesome things, including copper, because it's his answer to everything, and he explains it quite nicely. And we also talk about melasma and parasites and iron infusions and why nature doesn't want you to be fat. Also talks about a fat switch. Is there such a thing as a fat switch in the body? And uric acid and histamines. So it's a really good episode. I think you're all going to really like it. And don't forget about his awesome book that's out on Amazon now. You can actually get it in the show notes. Just click on the link. And also the Dutch Test is having a huge sale, and I am forwarding that sale to you guys and offering you a coupon for $75 towards a Dutch Test plus interpretation plus a program. So check that out in the show notes as well, and enjoy the show. Yo, hello there.
How you doing?
Yes, it's working.
Okay. We've had five conversations. And this would be number six.
Really? Are you sure it's that six or five? Wow.
Yeah, I've kept track. So we've had five conversations.
Oh my goodness. That's amazing.
Yeah. No, it
you
isn't.
Are my most, that means you're my most repetitive, your guest I've had the most, well, you're not the most repetitive person, but you're the most, you're the person I've had on the most.
Say what you really mean. Come on.
Well, we all repeat ourselves, don't we?
Absolutely. Who's your most requested downloads?
They're not individual people so much as they are topics. Okay. Yeah. I think the most downloaded, for sure you're in the top five. You are one of them. I can't remember which one it is. Like the one before last, I think. Mm-hmm. Was the most downloaded. And then I have Georgie Dinkoff gets, because he's got such a cult following. And and he shares, and he always shares it. So that one. And then funny enough, my girlfriend who did a breast explant, she's an explant breast person. Yes. She's one of the top five for like all since in 7 years.
That's so cool. So how are you doing? You got a lot of balls in the air these days.
I do. I do. I am like a full-time housewife, at which I'm happy to be and enjoy it and I'm blessed. But yeah. I realized Healthy Gut Girl has always been kind of like a side hustle for me.
Yeah.
And then, and I've always just been like, you know, cooking and cleaning and taking care of the dog and the house, just everything and the bills and stuff like that, you know? And, and then, which is the last, well, since Ona's happened the last few years, it's, you know, Healthy Gut Girl and Ona's has become a full-time job. And so, yeah. And so that makes me having two full-time jobs. So it's good. That's the balls in the air. And it's great. I wouldn't want it any other way. I would like some more cohesion to my life. Like I definitely feel like I'm not the most organized person I feel like I could use that, but,
yeah, you need a full-time person to manage you.
Yes. I need a business manager. People exactly. are like, I'll be your assistant. I'm like, no, because right. then I have to manage you. Right. I need someone to tell me what to do.
Yeah.
And I'm still looking for that person.
Yeah, no, I can believe that, because it's, and you know, by virtue of your time with Jigsaw, your magnesium burn rate is full tilt.
It right? is, and you know, I never really have gotten to the bottom of my heavy metal stuff. And so I know that I have, I just call it low grade infections that I've lived with that are keeping me from optimizing, you know, my health. And
Probably parasites.
Probably, yeah. I mean, I think we all have some level of parasites for sure, but it seems just like my symptoms now these days seem to it's more about not having the energy that I used to have. And that's really my only big complaint, you know. I don't within that umbrella is not really recovering well from working out. You know, like if I work out and I just do a little too much, which is very easy to do without realizing it, you know, it can really take me down for several days where I'm just exhausted and sore and my, you know, the muscle fatigue. And so that's no fun. And
you know, I wrote a book about that, right?
I know. That's what I'm telling you. So
it's actually doing quite well. It's really fun to see it humming along.
Yeah, that was one of my questions, was just how is your book doing, and that what is the response by and large from everybody?
Number 9 in nutrition books, number 91 in medical books.
Wow, that's pretty good.
And like 35, there's 33 million titles in Amazon.
Yeah.
And I'm 3571 or something like that. I'm like, what?
Wow.
It's insane. So it's just, it's a surreal moment.
That's really cool. I mean, that says a lot. And to keep it circulating like that, because I know that the reviews have to come to keep that book up in that status. So
it's not just the reviews, it's the sales.
Right, of course. Yeah.
I asked the guest writer, I said, what's going on? He said, you're selling books, dude. That's what
Yeah, I mean, that for sure. But I mean, like, when I was working for, you know, that media company that shall go unnamed since they canceled me, I definitely, you know, their big effort when we started to market the book was reviews. And they're like, you know, we need to get you into the top 10 of one of the categories. Right. And that's going to help sell more. And so for you to be up in that cat in those categories for this long means, yeah, sales for sure. And people are taking the time to review it. And that means a lot.
Yeah, no, I'm humbled. Trust me.
Yeah.
It's just, I think it's a subject that people are intrigued by. I don't think that many people say, yeah, he's right. I think they're just really, they're genuinely fascinated by what they learn.
Yeah. Because it makes sense.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So actually, I have a really interesting question for you.
Okay. Yeah, what do you want?
Yeah, right. What color was your hair when you were a young girl?
Black. As black as a raven.
That's what I thought. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you're sitting down, right?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So I've gotten to know the Amish pretty well. Mm-hmm. That's a rather sweeping statement, but
yeah, we talked about that. So yeah, I'm excited. I love your Amish stories because I love the Amish too.
So this one person in particular really encouraged me to read these books by Pat Colby, Natural Goat Care and Sheep Care and Horse Care and Cattle Care, and in the books, Pat Colby, who's a world-renowned animal farmer in Australia, she makes a point that any animal, cat, dog, sheep, we'll come back to black sheep, but, you know, black Angus. Mm. If you see a herd of Angus and they have a rusty tuft on their shoulder, you know they've got a mineral issue. Gorillas. Anyone with black hair, any animal with black hair, like Italians, Asians, Japanese, Africans, Middle Eastern, absolutely. They need more copper because their hair is expressing black. The melanin needs more tyrosinase to make more black. And here's the question. How much more copper do you need to support your black hair compared to mine what mine is missing, but when it was there, it was more red than it was anything. But what do you think the differential was? How much more?
I can't even guess.
6 times more copper.
What?
And this is based on research from Japan in the 1960s. Now, I'm a pretty enterprising researcher.
Mm-hmm. One of the best.
Yeah, I haven't found it yet, but I think I may have found the author, but I haven't found the actual research study. But Pat Colby has integrity, and she wouldn't bring this up in each of the 4 books. But the reason why I bring it up is that I suspected you had black hair. We've talked on many occasions that maybe you didn't get enough copper from dear old mom because she didn't get it from her mom and so on and so forth.
And I was the last baby too, which I think plays a role in it.
A huge role. How many siblings?
Well, there's my brother and my sister, but then there was a stillborn baby that my mom carried for, I think, like 5 or 6 months.
Okay. So you were number 4.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes a big, that's very significant.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the other point that Pat Colby makes. If an animal is copper deficient, and we know you're copper deficient now because your hair is gray,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not picking on you. I'm just observing.
Stop!
Actually, I love that photograph that showed up with your birthday.
Oh, my, yeah.
Happy birthday, by the way.
Thank you.
Where's my cupcake with a candle in it? But that's a great picture.
Thank you.
That's a really cool salt and pepper, really sweet picture.
I know. If I'm going to have it, I might as well rock it as best I can.
That's right.
Yeah. I just fly my copper deficiency flag high.
Exactly. But if you are copper deficient, Pat Colby says you have parasites.
Really?
And if you have parasites, then you are copper deficient.
Well, that makes sense because parasites love iron. And if
of
I'm
course.
Copper deficient, the iron's going to be abundant in me, in my gut.
Right.
So that's the case with these animals then. They've all got parasitic infections, most likely. Well, I mean, animals do, but.
Yeah, but it isn't. See, the thing is, it isn't just the gut. I know you are a healthy gut girl. I get that. But it's.
Apparently not.
It could be anywhere in the body.
Mm.
It could. I think where a lot of the pathogens are, they're hanging out in the spleen and the liver. And what I just learned recently, which I think you really will appreciate, because a number of your followers struggle with iron issues,
mm-hmm.
and even go to the extreme of getting iron infusions.
Yes. Isn't it crazy?
It is crazy.
I mean, we see it once a week at least.
Right. Well, here's something that they need to know. There was an original study done in the 30s, and it was updated in 1947 by a team of physicians that I have a lot of respect for. They're with the University of Utah, headed up by a gentleman named Max Weintraub. He wrote the first textbook of hematology. The guy was a beast.
Wow.
And anyway, he had a real penchant for copper, as you would expect. And they did 31 studies looking at the dynamics between copper and iron at the University of Utah Medical Center from the 50s to the late 70s. Okay. So for a 30-year period, they were just stirring the pot. But in 1947, they wanted to update this study that had been done in like 35, 36. And what they found and what they stated was that when you get an iron infusion, the belief has always been that iron will go to the recycling macrophages to help the recycling program.
Mm-hmm.
No. It goes straight to the spleen and to the liver.
Oh.
And when that happens, go back to your comment about parasites living on iron. And the way I'm interpreting the research now, Kitty, is that if someone has high ferritin, the inflammatory form of ferritin, there's an iron overload in the liver. If they have low ferritin, there's iron overload and likely parasites in the spleen.
Really?
Yep.
Okay, so then ferritin is telling us something.
Oh, it is telling us.
We didn't like it before as a bit of a red herring, like, oh, I've got low ferritin and I've got to get my ferritin up. But you're saying we can utilize ferritin value
As
for
an
other.
indicator of what's going on. And what's fascinating about it is there are transport proteins, one to bring iron into ferritin, and then there's a transport protein to bring ferritin into the recycling system in the liver. Well, they're both copper dependent.
No.
I know, a shock. But the thing is, it's the great misunderstanding, as we've discussed on many occasions, is the confusion about the role of copper versus iron. And it's very simple. Copper's the general, and iron's the foot soldier.
Right.
Now picture the Battle of the Bulge, and there's no Patton. Very different outcome.
Very different.
So that's what we're up against, is that the
The
practitioners are
massacre at
completely
the Bulge.
the massacre, exactly. And the practitioners don't know, they've never been trained in copper, as we've discussed. And you can't make heme. You can't make hemoglobin. You can't make a red blood cell. You can't recycle a red blood cell. You can't move the iron from the enterocyte into the bloodstream unless you have copper. I mean, all these are copper dependent functions, but there's silence in the literature about it, the mainstream literature.
Right.
And so that's where the confusion is. But I thought you would appreciate, one, knowing about the copper connection to your hair. But secondly, I know that there's a huge dynamic in your community around iron infusions. People don't realize where that iron is going. And if you follow the work of Jamie Collins at University of Florida, as soon as you start to bring in too much iron, you've just shut down your copper metabolism because it just overwhelms it. Well, then guess what you've got? You've got a fatigue problem because the iron's going into the mitochondria now, can't get out, and then the iron starts to build in the mitochondria and puts out the fire. Very simple.
I guess I mean it's simply a sort of simple, but not, because I guess here's the problem, I think, not just with my community, but with people in general, and is that if they feel better when they get an iron infusion and their hemoglobin goes up and their doctor is happy, they're like, woohoo, right? That's the big problem. I was blessed to not feel better after my only infusion. In fact, I felt like they were putting poison in my veins.
I
We
remember.
left that place, and you remember, and I was like sick. I was worse. Within a couple of days, I was getting an actual transfusion because I just felt like it worsened everything so much. But and I say this to people also in regards to estrogen, when they're taking supplementing estrogen, and I just say, yeah, it might make you feel better and it might take away some pretty severe symptoms, but that doesn't mean that it isn't causing harm in other ways. And that's a really hard thing for people to wrap their heads around. And this has been the challenge in my
Sure.
group regarding the root cause protocol
David,
from the beginning. It's just been,
absolutely. No, I absolutely understand. Yeah, because the thing is, so much of the intervention and healing, whether it's formal medicine or just, alternative practitioners or whatever, it's symptom relief. But what we really try to get at with the RCP is let's get to the
Right, the root
origin of the
cause.
problem, the root cause, and get to the origin. And not everyone has the patience for that. And the thing is, there is a spike. When you introduce any heavy metal into the body, whether it's arsenic or lead or iron, you are going to get a spike in red blood cells. And Robert Hodges proved that back in 1978. But it's followed by a collapse. So then you got to get another spike, collapse, another spike, collapse. Well, that should tell you that there's something wrong because the body does not, it, we're not designed to work that way, responding to spikes, at least pre-2020. Now we're dealing with spikes all the time. But the thing is, the mechanism to smooth that out, that what Hodges found, which I think is fascinating, he found it was retinol that absolutely brought the hemoglobin back to its glory. And again, it's just it's understanding how these nutrients work together,
right?
And that they are in tandem with their partners and things like that. So that's just the key, is getting people to recognize some of those dynamics.
Well, since you brought up retinol, I might as well throw one of these questions in. Constantine asked me, why are you against retinol palmitate or acetate for some people who have a hard time with the other retinol sources? Like, yes, liver is best, but why so against retinol acetate?
I don't think it's natural. I mean, it's, and again, it's not that the RCP is a rigid, it's got to be natural, but we try to avoid synthetic wherever we can.
Right. Like the copper chelate that I took, I remember you saying, I don't love that you're taking it, but I think you're in a position right now. This was back in the day where you're like, I think you'll benefit from it. And I do think it really helped at the time.
Yeah, I think it did. So, and I think the question, it begs the question, what is their struggle? And when I get clients who are dealing with that, particularly on the retinol side, I know that they have excess iron and they don't have enough copper.
Mm-hmm.
So then you're in a transition stage of trying to get them from where they are to get them to where they need to be.
Well, that rings true for myself back in the day, where I feel like I couldn't really get enough copper from my diet. I couldn't, you know, I still feel that way. I'm eating a lot, you know, I eat more chicken livers than most people, and I do, you know, because I know there's more bioavailable copper in chicken liver than beef liver, right?
The thing is, you're probably getting some fats that you don't need in the chicken livers. The distribution of fat is a little different in the chicken than it is in the cow.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's going to vary from farm to farm, right?
Yeah.
And if you've got a really pristine farm that you're using, you probably can be a little more relaxed about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if it's just Bob's chicken livers, let's look into that a little deeper.
How about Mary's?
Yeah, really.
It is really, that's the Mary's air chilled chicken livers. But so, okay. So then you can be doing all the right things as far as uptaking enough of the, you know, of the vitamin, of the retinol and the things you're supposed to be doing. But if you aren't unloading that iron,
right,
then it's an uphill battle, right? It's not going to shift the parasite problem. It's not going to shift.
Exactly. I know as soon as I'm talking with someone who's been on the protocol, the first question I ask is, what's your version of it? That's what
mm-hmm.
I'm saying to you.
Right.
But as soon as I know they've been doing it and they feel like they've hit a plateau, and it happens all the time.
Yeah.
There are only two questions. Have you dumped any iron? And have you dumped your fears? Whether it's EFT or emotion code or EMDR, people don't realize how connected iron and the emotions are. And especially when someone's had chronic conditions, chronic fatigue, chronic anemia, chronic whatever, they think they're broken. Well, if someone thinks they're broken, that's going to cause anxiety.
Right. Fear.
And they're doing what they've been told to do and they're not getting better. So that only intensifies their fear.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the most important things people can do. That I was listening to a video just earlier today, and a physician was talking about, he was actually a chiropractor. He was talking about helping someone to release a grudge they had against their father, to really apologize, to reach a level of peace, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And the next day they excreted this crab-like parasite. It's like, yeah, it's like creepy beyond belief.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what was holding the parasite, because that's what was blocking the flow of energy and the emotion. Emotions are so powerful, and those have to be dealt with.
Yeah, that's really, really profound, because Dr. Marshall used to say, I know I always have to say Dr. Marshall's name at least once in my podcast.
it's in the fine print, right?
It is. It is. You know, he used to say that about cancer and about liver issues. He said that the liver is called, I guess in Chinese medicine, maybe it's called the angry old man.
Yes.
And that we
Right.
carry that like anger in our liver.
Yes.
And that's such, you know, iron and anger. And that just goes hand in hand, doesn't it? And we don't really address that stuff that much. You know, people don't really think about that much. And
I guess what
and
the
so,
emotion is with iron in the liver, in the spleen.
What?
It's worry.
Ah.
So if you have someone, a client or whatever, colleague, neighbor,
Me.
yeah. But if you're constantly in a state of worry, asking constant questions. I was with a client. Liz and I were up in Dover, Delaware with a family. I mean, some real sick puppies there. And the mom just kept asking question after question after question. I said, have you been like this your whole life? She said, yeah. I said, you've had excess iron in your spleen. She goes, oh. And then it made sense because she had actually had iron infusions.
Interesting.
And so when people start to get really nervous or anxious, and you know there's something going on in the spleen, and very likely there's a parasite hanging out in there.
Right.
Just, and what do parasites love to do? They love to gobble up the copper and live on the iron.
Jerks.
They're just doing their job.
Interesting. Yeah.
So the emotions become really important, and people need to know how significant the shift that can take place as a result of dealing with them, and just surrender to that process.
Yeah. Wow. That's so fascinating because, you know, well, Dr. Marshall would say it's very difficult for somebody to heal from cancer if they haven't fully. I mean, I would say this goes for almost every disease, but he would say cancer is all about unforgiveness.
Exactly. Resentment.
And yeah, resentment and not being able to forgive. That's so interesting. Yeah. So let's go back to the sheep and the hare. So, okay. So what's the whole purpose of having black hair? I mean, you're saying that the body need it, that it expends minerals and probably energy to make it black. Like what's the, why? Like what's
so,
the reason?
No, it's a great question. So every shepherd who has a flock of sheep, and what color are they? They're white, but there's always one black sheep.
Right.
Always one black sheep. And every family has a black sheep, right? I know I was in my family. I'm not sure about you, but I was definitely the black sheep.
Come on.
Yeah, I know. But the reason why the shepherd has a black sheep is he knows as soon as the black hair starts to turn white on that black sheep, he has to go to another pasture to get the minerals that are needed, especially the copper. And he wouldn't have known about the research of Japan and blah, 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 but intuitively, shepherds have known that black hair requires more copper because it requires more tyrosinase, the tyrosinase enzyme that activates the melatonin, which creates color. Now, here's an important thing to know. All the colors from yellow to black, that's a lot of colors in there, are made by melanin, which means they're activated by tyrosinase. Now, why is that important? Well, because the food industry, the processed food industry, is very preoccupied with shelf life. They're not so concerned about your life, but they're concerned about shelf life. And what do they use to guarantee shelf life? Tyrosinase inhibitors.
What can you name some of those?
Well, they're really fancy chemicals.
Okay, and that's going to be on the ingredient label.
Yes.
Maybe.
maybe. But you wouldn't recognize. It's not going to say, this is the tyrosinase inhibitors that are going to. But the thing is, do you think the inhibition stops at the food? Or do you think it might continue when it goes into your mouth? And it's a very significant, I mean, there are scores of tyrosinase inhibitors. Because we don't like to buy brown bananas, do we?
Right.
We don't like to buy mushy apples or broccoli that's yellow, right?
Yeah.
But all of those colors are a result of melanin doing its job because tyrosinase said, you got to change color. The oxidation is forcing me to make you change the color.
So what role does estrogen have, like say in the or progestins in the birth control pill that then cause the melanin issue when people get melasma?
I think that's a great question. It's stirring the pot of bioavailable copper, not necessarily in a good way, but it's the mechanism to make color has regulation. So regulation means there's going to be a bell-shaped curve. And so there's two tails. And so when the tail goes the other way, it's going to start to form a darker, it's going to lose its ability to regulate in the middle, and it's going to go to one extreme or the other. And so people that have the white splotches on their skin, that's
that goes
a lack,
one way.
Right? That vitiligo, that's a lack of melanin expression. And then the other extreme is going to be melasma that you're talking about. And it's just dysregulation.
So I'm hearing that that polyunsaturated fats, estrogen, iron play a role in that. Does that make sense to you? Can you see where those pieces fit together? Estrogen, iron, and polyunsaturated fats.
Absolutely. And so estrogen is an antioxidant. All of the hormones are reacting to oxygen stress, whether we're talking about adrenaline or even estrogen, of course, but even the neurotransmitters. They're all responding to what's the state of oxygen inside this body. And they're trying to bring it back into regulation.
Homeostasis.
Okay. Homeostasis, exactly. So it's fascinating. The estrogen, and one thing that I learned recently, this is a fun book to read. Well, the truth is, nature doesn't want us to be fat. Nature wants us to be in homeostasis, just like you said. But when we're under stress, there's a fat switch, and then we do gain weight.
Oh my goodness. That's going to be, I have to record that and save that.
but
it's so obvious, but just the way you said it, there's a fat switch.
There is a fat switch. Well, that's his genius. I'm just parroting what he said, but the part that I think he misses is he doesn't understand that in order to have proper fat metabolism, there's a particular enzyme called PDE2, phosphodiesterase 2. And if that enzyme is allowed to express itself, it'll block fat metabolism. Now, Mother Nature has a plan, and this little thing called copper comes into phosphodiesterase and shuts it down. And then the fat can go into the mitochondria, courtesy of CPT1 and 2. Carnitine palmitoyltransferase, right?
Of course.
Which is copper dependent. So CPT1 and 2 are moving the fat into the mitochondria so it can generate 140 ATP instead of the 34 that you get with glucose. Mm-hmm. But you got to stop the PDE2. And if you don't stop PDE2, you got a mess on your hands. And that's the part that he misses, is that what actually happens is when we're under stress, and we're all still under stress from 2020, we're still still burning off that because it's not really resolving itself.
No.
At least to my satisfaction.
It's turning into a whole different monster.
Exactly. So I think we're of like mind. But the thing is that chronic stress increases the production of metallothionein fivefold. It's actually what it's doing is it's increasing the production of cortisol. Chronic stress is going to increase cortisol, and that cortisol is going to increase metallothionein 4 to 5 fold. And what is metallothionein going to do? It's going to bind up copper 1,000 times stronger than it binds up zinc. And so what you're effectively doing in an extreme chronic stressed state is you're shutting down energy production because there's no copper.
You know, I just had, as I always do in our shows, I just had a little aha moment, because this is going to go off the rails a tiny bit, which is to say that, you know, the repeat world and the root cause protocol world, or I like to call it the Morley world, are people think that they are not simpatico.
No,
but
I think
you just said the exact. So all you're explaining is you're taking a scalpel out to metabolism. You're taking a scalpel out and you're saying, yes, emergency hormones. Yes, everyone's running on emergency hormones and the thyroid's not upregulated. And therefore, you're burning your cortisol. You're using cortisol. You're using this, you're using that. And now you're not converting cholesterol into hormones. And now you're flipping on the fat switch. But you're just taking out a scalpel and saying, yes, that's all true. But let's get into how that's all happening and why. And it isn't just about, eating carrot salad and, getting all your vitamins in. I think it's the same story. You've just taken off the onion peel more, I think.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, because that my dream, my desire would be to see a union of these different perspectives.
Well,
But
there, I just did it.
well, thank you. No, you
I just
did.
unified.
The Kitty method. But the thing is, what people need to do is put everything into an energy paradigm. And when oxygen is not being activated in the mitochondria to make water to release energy, it's being made into oxidants. And when the oxidants build, there is a metabolic reaction, just as you noted. And so you're going to have hormones are going to respond, you're going to have inflammatory cytokines, you're going to have all sorts of chemicals and agents that are going to respond to that building oxygen. But it's like, well, let's get back to burning oxygen or activating oxygen more cleanly. That's the real issue. And inside the mitochondria, we got to make a lot of stuff. We got to recycle calcium. We've got to recycle iron. We got to start to make sure the energy is there to fold proteins. And it's like, energy is everything. And so to me, it's really important to understand how this metabolite is going to affect energy production versus that metabolite. And so I think a few months ago, I pinged you about Michael Platt's book on adrenaline
Adrenaline
dominance,
dominance.
which I was fascinated by. And what's his solution? Do you know his solution?
Progesterone.
Progesterone, of
Progesterone. Yeah,
course.
I've had him on my show, and he was one of my first eye openers to progesterone to the degree that he uses it.
Absolutely. And it makes sense in light of his understanding, but that doesn't mean it's the only solution.
No,
But it's a good solution. But I don't know that it's the most natural, but it's like, does it work? Absolutely. Has he helped people? Oh my God, the impact he's had has been enormous. But the thing is, I think the part that would be interesting for him to fold into his understanding is that when we're under stress, we know cortisol gets fired up, and we know adrenaline gets fired up, right? We know that. Do you know anything about noradrenaline?
A little bit.
Yeah. So NOR means no R group, no methyl group. That's what noradrenaline means. And after I read his book, I was just absolutely flabbergasted. I was so excited to get this perspective of his, because it tied right back into estrogen dominance, which ties into iron dominance. I mean, it's just, you can imagine me connecting those dots. But the thing is, I came across a study from 1968 that was studying copper deficient animals under stress. And what happened? Well, they made cortisol and they made adrenaline, but they couldn't make noradrenaline, because you got to have copper to make noradrenaline. And why is noradrenaline so important? Well, adrenaline, it's a fuel injector. It's making sure that oxygen gets into the mitochondria so it gets activated. And do you think there's going to be some iron that goes with it? Of course there is. So iron's going to be building with a lot of adrenaline, which is why the estrogen's building, because there's no ceruloplasmin to neutralize it, right? And if you don't have noradrenaline, noradrenaline is what's stimulating the antioxidant enzymes, superoxide dismutase, catalase, glutathione peroxidase. So if noradrenaline is in the basement, your antioxidant enzymes are in the basement, and guess what they run on? Copper. So it makes sense that a copper deficient animal would be low in noradrenaline, low in antioxidants, and depend on estrogen as an antioxidant because there's no bioavailable copper. Does that make sense?
It does make sense, and but it certainly gives some like a positive look on estrogen in a way. Like it's there to help us. Shocking. Oh, so the noradrenaline
Right.
is
Requires
not norepinephrine.
No.
Okay.
No, it is. So adrenaline and epinephrine are the same. Noradrenaline, norepinephrine would be the
okay.
same.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I just had this thought. So if you don't have norepinephrine, noradrenaline, then you, and that's a fuel injector.
Adrenaline is the fuel injector.
Okay. So what's the purpose of the noradrenaline?
When you're forcing oxygen into the system, it's usually under acute conditions, the chance for oxidative stress rises.
Right.
There's going to be more speed to try to respond to the crisis, running away from the tiger, fighting the bear, whatever. But the problem we have in modern society is it's all chronic stress. It's not acute stress. But the purpose is an acute intervention of adrenaline is to increase oxygen so it can be activated. And it's supposed to be partnered with noradrenaline so you can deal with the exhaust of making that energy. There's always, like when we're driving a car, there's always exhaust coming out the back.
Mm-hmm.
When the engine's not tuned right, there's more exhaust. And so that's what the whole point is to try to bring balance and symmetry to it. And, you know, I think it was probably sometime last year, I sent you a study about mountain goats. I know you sat down and read that one.
I tried.
but it was fascinating because it clearly indicated that the release of progesterone, and it implied that the synthesis, I'm not sure I would go there, but the point is the release of progesterone was in fact copper dependent. And so if you're trying to make progesterone, you got to have magnesium, you got to have B6. Well, how does magnesium get burned up? By too much iron. So copper keeps the iron in check so the magnesium's available.
Mm-hmm.
The B6 has to be turned into P5P. That's the active form, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's an enzyme that does that. Pyridoxal 5-phosphate oxidase. And guess who the battery pack is for the P5P oxidase? It's copper.
Guess. So interesting because, you know, one of the things that that medicated birth control does is it makes you B6 dependent, especially while you're on it. And then they say it doesn't last, that you can regain your body's ability to make B6. But I just don't think that that's true at all. I think it lingers and makes you B6 dependent forever. I'm living proof. And so then, you know, we need the B6 for so many things, but also to make progesterone, but to hold the bile salts in suspension in the gallbladder. And then if you don't have enough B6, then that you get this solidifying gallstone issue, which is why so many more women have their gallbladders removed than men.
So much. Thank you. I've always wondered what that was. Mm. That makes a lot of sense.
It does, right? And so it's just a big mess is what it is. So then B6, so what popped into my head with the noradrenaline was, for some reason, was coffee. And some people have a real difficult time with coffee. You know, like I can't have much coffee because I'll just get super sweaty and my adrenaline goes through the roof.
Right.
And so then, you know, I talked to the Repeat crew about it and they're like, oh, it speaks volumes about your liver. And I'm like, okay, well, what does it say?
Right.
Well, you could have fatty liver disease. You could have this, you could have that. And I'm like, I'm wondering if this is an iron, you know, issue. And then the norepinephrine or noradrenaline, not having that to be able to clear the exhaust from when you get that burst from the coffee. I don't know. I'm just making it up.
No, I think you're onto something. And what I'm really intrigued by right now, and I'm actually obsessed by it, is uric acid. Everyone's heard of gout,
mm-hmm.
and incidence of gout is like this because of some changes in the farming system.
Mm.
But uric acid, it's an antioxidant when it's in the plasma, the seawater that the red blood cells swim in. Mm-hmm. It's an antioxidant there. But when uric acid starts to build up in the cell, it becomes a prooxidant. it's a double agent. It is Jekyll Hyde. It's amazing, especially in a copper deficient body. But the important thing is, guess what estrogen does to uric acid? It inhibits it. Now, the part that you may not know about uric acid is I think it's the stealth factor in a lot of chronic disease. And uric acid, according to Dr. Johnson, and then I've got a book by Perlmutter, Drop Acid. But it's a very popular topic right now. This is very cutting edge research, is that uric acid, excess uric acid, it's called HUA, hyperuricemia. And that's a big word, but it's the engine for metabolic syndrome. It's the engine for heart disease, diabetes, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, cancer, neurodegeneration. And it's a sleeper issue because most practitioners think it just means gout, when in fact, what it's really implying is a complete metabolic breakdown in the cell. Purines are not being metabolized properly. And when we're under chronic stress, our body, which is what I'm most fascinated by Dr. Johnson's work, is our body has the ability to make fructose. And fructose metabolism is really challenging, but it's the source of most of the uric acid in our body is fructose. And so between 1970 and 1990, there's been a tenfold increase in high fructose corn syrup. Massive increase in high fructose corn syrup. Let's add to that iron fortification. Let's add to that omega-6 oils. And oh, by the way, let's take away copper and retinol, and you've got a mess on your hands. And so that's, I think, the uric acid issue. I would be willing to, I haven't connected the dots with adrenaline, but I'll bet there is a connection between uric acid and adrenaline. But it certainly makes sense with the estrogen side. That isn't it, estrogen is a good guy. Estrogen is all the body has to work with when ceruloplasmin is absent. And the other point that I wanted to really mention for your community was a study done in India, very enterprising study, to measure ceruloplasmin levels and endometrial wall thickness in the uterus. And they're inversely related. So that the lower the ceruloplasmin is in the woman's body, the thicker the uterine wall is, and the greater the propensity for heavy bleeding. It's called DUB, dysfunctional uterine bleeding. But it makes sense. If the ceruloplasmin is low, what's going to be high? Iron
Iron.
and estrogen. What do iron and estrogen like to do? They like to grow things. So they make the wall thicker. And what's the bleeding all about? The body knows intuitively it has too much iron and it's trying to get rid of that iron. And how do practitioners interpret it? Oh, you need more iron.
Right, and more estrogen.
And more estrogen because you're bleeding too much. And that's because they don't have a full appreciation for how all this fits together. And I think when it becomes chronic, that's when everything starts to get really wobbly. And I think that's when the fat switch gets turned on.
So that's interesting about fructose, though, because when I think of gout, I think of, people that have a super acidic diet with a lot of PUFA
And
and
a lot of meat.
a lot of bad meat, I would say commercially, right? I wouldn't say, I eat a lot of meat, and I just don't know that that's necessarily, it's just too general. But yeah, like poor diet, super acidic diet. But I don't think of fructose. So what about fructose from fruit?
That's everyone wants to defend their fruit.
Well, I mean, I definitely love fruit, but I mean, I'm seasonal. I don't eat it all the time, but
Right.
I do, I have major issues with orange juice, and it's my favorite. And that's, of course, a repeat, dynamo tool.
Right.
But and I have a sensitivity to it. So I'm very curious about, like, wait a minute, maybe I'm not digesting this fructose. And I was thinking it was maybe a candida thing, but it doesn't flare up when I'm eating sugar. It doesn't flare up when I'm eating gluten. It flares up when I'm having orange juice. So citrus allergy makes me think, I wonder if that has to do with what you're talking about.
When you start with fructose, it's going to work its way to something called hypoxanthine. And then hypoxanthine interacts with an enzyme called xanthine oxidase.
Oh boy.
That's going to create xanthine. And then xanthine is going to become uric acid. What's playing in the background of xanthine oxidase is it's giving off superoxide. Superoxide is an oxygen molecule with an extra electron, and it's really pissed off about it. And you need to be able to neutralize. It shouldn't be called superoxide. It should be called hyperoxide. That makes more sense. And the superoxide dismutase is a silly way of saying neutralize. So SOD is copper dependent. It's called copper zinc SOD. Copper is catalytic. Zinc is structural. There's a big difference between something that's catalytic and structural, but they want us to know there's zinc in there. Ooh. But when the SOD is low, because copper is low in the body, because a person's not eating the right foods, then you may not be breaking down the fructose properly because there's a buildup of uric acid because of the xanthine oxidase not being neutralized properly by the SOD.
I don't think I followed that whole trip.
What
That's
would
strange.
be easier? What would be easier is if I had a flip chart I could show you. But the point is, there are about 10 steps in the process, and the last three steps are the most critical.
And they're
And the last,
copper dependent.
yes,
Okay.
they depend on copper to neutralize the exhaust.
Okay.
When there's a buildup of exhaust, that's when uric acid becomes so destructive.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And so do you, I mean, do you think that that explains like a orange juice allergy, or could that also be just a digestive issue?
It could be a simple allergy, simple sensitivity. It's intriguing that I don't think I've ever talked to anyone who has a sensitivity to vitamin C. And what are we talking, organic, fresh squeezed orange juice? Are we talking
Yeah.
about?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In oranges, so
Right.
there's.
What I was just going to point out is that citrus produces histamines. And I think that's what's happening in your body is there's an increase in histamines. And when ceruloplasmin is doing its job, there's a fourfold increase in histaminase when histamines are present. My guess is your ceruloplasmin isn't flexing its muscles enough to neutralize the histamines.
Well, we know that.
Well, yeah, but the thing is, maybe a trip to an NAET practitioner might help soften the sensitivity you have to the oranges, which is what's tripping the wire for the histamines. Your body is perceiving the histamines as they're the hormones of alert. So your body is perceiving the orange as a threat. And that it's a rheostat. You can tie all that rheostat back so it doesn't perceive it as big a threat, and it's not going to produce as many histamines.
Let's talk about histamines if you don't mind. But I want to hear from your perspective. Like, so many women deal with histamine issues, and now we're starting to learn that even migraines can be a histamine
Absolutely.
response. And then there's other histamine responses, like even insomnia can
Absolutely.
actually be. So tell me more about histamine, estrogen. My friend Constantine had this great word. He said, histamine is a arm of harm of estrogen.
Oh, interesting. I've never connected it to estrogen, but it makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, all these estrogen dominant women mostly are the ones dealing, and iron dominant.
Right. So again, bring it back to its fundamental construct.
Okay.
Low copper, high iron. As soon as you've got low copper, high iron, you're going to have a breeding ground for estrogen. And anyone I've ever worked with who has sensitivities to food or their environment, which means they have more histamines, it's an expression of low copper, high iron. It's axiomatic with the imbalance. And it's not that, again, we have to remember that copper is the general and iron is the foot soldier. So there's only 100 milligrams of copper. That fits on the head of a 1-inch stick pin.
That's like progesterone versus estrogen.
Exactly. But it's really powerful, right? And
potent.
So iron, there's thousands of milligrams of iron in the body. I would argue that there's way more than what the literature tells you, but the point is there's a 50, it could be as high as 100-to-1 ratio between iron and copper. But when it gets way out of whack, when it gets to 150 or 200 with the ratio, that sets up an energetic dynamic. And then if there is an adequate ceruloplasmin, again, people are like, what's he keep saying that word for? It's the master antioxidant protein in the body.
Yeah.
What I find fascinating about it is there's, when you get into the genes, there's introns and exons. It's like, oh my God. So the exons are the active part, introns are inactive part. Well, there's 20 copper binding sites on the exons of the ceruloplasmin gene. And it's like, that's a big deal. It means that it has a diversity of function that people don't really understand. But if ceruloplasmin is not expressing properly, the body's got to replace it with something. So estrogen comes to the rescue. And in a super sensitive body, the body is going to be pumping out histamines, because it's what's really behind the histamine is the hydroxyl radical. And the hydroxyl radical is the most damaging biomolecule on the planet. And the body is trying to avoid the damage that it's going to do to tissue. That's really what's going on. And what is supposed to happen is that ceruloplasmin thingy is supposed to express histaminase enzyme. A fourfold increase that's a big change, but a fourfold increase to slice and dice the histamines and neutralize them so they don't go on to cause more disruption going forward. So it's, and then the histamines are really going to affect energy production. What happens when you have an allergic reaction? What's really happening is the histamines are driving magnesium and potassium out of the cell, driving sodium and calcium into the cell, flooding it with water, and energy production goes. And if you have orange juice, I'm sure your energy tanks. You're probably just like lethargic.
Yeah, I mean, it depends. It depends. But if I already feel lethargic, it can give me some energy. But it just depends. And, you know, I've definitely gotten better with things, but I just can't. I feel like it triggers a type of eczema in me, and it used to really affect me respiratorily. So I would feel like, I've actually triggered a full blown, you know, like respiratory cough from it. And then I overcame that, obviously, cause you know, my estrogen is not as high as it was. So that brings me to this new piece of information that I've been studying recently about what happens in perimenopause, and particularly in menopause, when progesterone is almost, you know, crashes, it's very, very low. And then your estrogen retreats into the tissues. And so in circulation, your blood serum is low, your estrogen levels are low. But Georgi Dinkov has this new type of, you might have heard about it, or you might be very interested to know. He's done some studies with this new type of hair nail analysis that shows the hormone levels in the tissue, in the nails and in the hair.
That's and you exciting. Can,
yeah. And so I want to do it, but it's really spendy. And, but it's
so one of your homes in Florida.
Yeah, exactly. One of my many homes. Yeah, no, it's very expensive, and it's like $700 for just to see the estrogen and and just to see the, and then if you will add anything else to it, it's quite expensive. So, but I really want to do it, and I want to do the Dutch at the same time, and I want to do a spot lab at the same time, and I'd like to do a serum and just do all of it and then just check it out, because I have extremely low levels of estrogen, almost undetectable, as well as my testosterone, because my cholesterol is like, my LDL is insane. Like, people won't even give me life insurance. They're like, what the heck?
Your HDL or LDL?
My LDL, well, my total is in the 300s, and my, yeah. So,
no,
so I know you're getting
you
to
of, it just means you have a lot of oxidative stress in your liver. That's
right. And so,
and
my thyroid is slow. It's not, you know, I'm running on that, you know, the, on the fat switch, although I'm not that fat, but it is that cortisol switch, you know? And, but I was saying, what do you think about that? About the, as we age and women get, and this happens with men too, but women get into menopause and all of a sudden that estrogen goes right into the tissues, and then they get vaginal atrophy and they get dryness and all this, and no libido because they just have no more estrogen in circulation. And now, but it's all in the tissue. And so they're taking estrogen, which is scary. But what do you think of that?
Makes perfect sense.
Okay.
One of the big contributions by Bruce Ames, who was a world renowned, he's still alive. He used to be at Berkeley for many, many decades. But at the peak of his career, he was the most quoted scientist on the planet. He isn't just, you know, Bob Jones. This is Bruce Ames, who is a big deal.
Okay.
He did a study in 2004 with a number of his colleagues. And what they discovered is that there could be 10 times more iron in the tissue than there is in the blood. So it makes perfect sense that estrogen would elevate in the tissue, because it's trying to neutralize the oxidative stress that the iron is causing in the tissue. And I don't know what the release mechanism is. I haven't studied the hormones well enough, only because I think that I don't, and I know this is heretical, I don't think the hormones run the body. I think they respond to the body.
I think I agree with that. Yeah.
Okay. So they're responding to the mineral dynamics, energy production, and oxidative stress.
Not that you were waiting for my approval.
No. But,
I think that makes sense too. I don't feel like the hormones run the body either. Yeah.
Yeah. And so the thing is, for some reason, the estrogen is in the tissue because the iron is in the tissue. Why is the iron in the tissue? Because it can't get out because there's a lack of copper to open the iron doorway to let it out. There must be an estrogen doorway. There's got to be a doorway. There's got to be some transporter, some channel that is designed to release the estrogen, and under oxidative stress, it can't do it.
Well, you say copper is the general and iron is the foot soldier. And of course I say estrogen is the lion and progesterone is the lion tamer.
Okay.
So maybe it's the crash of progesterone, you know, and probably pregnenolone and all of that, that just goes. And then there's no escort. There's no, it's not opposing. It's not there to oppose the estrogen. So, well, that makes sense. So then, but then why wasn't it in the tissues to begin with? Because you had progesterone, perhaps. So what was the iron doing? It was causing all kinds of oxidative stress problems in your skin and in your organs and eyes, making your hair go gray.
Every facet of aging, Kitty, 100% of the symptoms of aging are all expressions of iron accumulation. It doesn't matter where it expresses, but that is aging, is iron accumulation. And it accumulates when the iron can't be circulated and recycled because of a lack of copper. That's one of the most important things for people to understand, is that what's happened in the modern era is they've turned iron into a storage vehicle. Let's focus on this ferritin. No, that's not, iron does get stored, but it's not meant to be the preoccupation of iron is to store it. We're supposed to circulate it. We're supposed to recycle it. And that the circulation and the recycling is a copper function. And when you start to store it, you're creating chaos.
Wow.
Does that make sense?
It does. And it's, I'm left with this feeling of frustration with this, because I feel like, especially for me, for somebody like me, and there, I know that there's so many women like me in the group, because it's just, I feel like I've done so much homework, you know? And
Absolutely.
there's this component there about the iron, and yeah, it's like we're getting dumping that iron. And
And again, you're, I assume you're Italian?
no,
No. Oh, I'm sorry.
new. My husband's Italian.
Okay.
I'm Spanish Basque and I'm American Indian.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, then you do have black hair. Wow.
I do have black hair.
No. So, again, think of the foods that your ancestors would have eaten that you didn't get exposed to. And in the spring, Liz and I were in the Dallas area doing a talk about the book. And this woman came up to me after the presentation, and she says, "You know, Morley, my dad was a physician." Said, "But he was passionate about Native American Indian medicine." She says, "All I can tell you, I don't know anything about what he studied. All I know is that their medicine is based on copper." I went, "What?" So again, when you think about these ancient healing paradigms, traditional Chinese medicine, Ayurvedic medicine, Native American Indian medicine, they knew how important the minerals were. In Ayurvedic medicine, the most prized source of healing is peacock feathers. Guess what color peacock feathers are?
Yeah,
Blue.
blue.
What do you
Oh.
think is behind that? Copper.
Well, they're green too.
Yeah, but again, a lot of it is blue. And
Yeah.
then in traditional Chinese medicine, what is qi? Qi is copper. What is heat? Heat is iron. It's inflammation. And I had a number of acupuncturists go through the program, and we did a crosswalk between Western and Eastern and figured out that's what the real dynamic was in the body.
Interesting. Oh, now you're
Qi.
going to send me down the Native American medicine rabbit hole for sure. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is very, very cool. And again, what happened to the Native American Indians? They were put on the Western diet. And what happened? They got diabetes.
Corn.
Yeah, corn. It was just it wasn't their
Which they
corn.
still, it's still a
Their
huge, yeah.
corn was from, they would burn spruce with it. What's in spruce? Oh yeah, that copper thing is in there. No, it's just it again, all of this wisdom is out there. It's scattered in different sources and
Yeah,
places.
diluted and
Right.
misrepresented.
And I think your issue though about the estrogen, I think it's a circulation issue, and I'm confident I'll look into it tomorrow, but I'm certain that there's a transport channel that needs to be activated, and it's turned off because of oxidative stress, or it's turned off because of uric acid.
Interesting. Uric acid.
Uric acid is just a it's a badass. It's on all sorts of
What do you think about aspirin?
things. Well, that's a really personal question, you
I
know.
just was thinking, you know, it's just it's really but actually it, just with what you said a minute ago about, you know, why estrogen comes into play is because it's an antioxidant. It's trying to reduce the oxidative damage that the iron is causing. So the aspirin, so it makes me, it begs the question then, why would we want to move the estrogen if we have not addressed the iron problem?
That's a great question. Very well said.
It's kind of like candida. Like, do you want to move the kill the candida when it's actually there to buffer the iron or the parasites or the mold or the
Exactly.
leaky gut?
Yeah, you
Root
cannot have
cause.
candida. Yeah, right. You can't have candida if you don't have excess iron. They're absolutely tied together. And that's the work of Ron Alline back in the 1980s. But that's aspirin, you know, I grew up with aspirin. And then also Bufferin. Have you ever heard of Bufferin?
Sure, yep.
Sure. Well, that's aspirin with copper.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. And now you can't find it.
What? You can't find it? Not even on Amazon?
No. No, it's gone.
I was about to buy some.
Yeah, I know. Right. Yeah. Well, get my Recuperate. That'll give you the copper that you're looking for.
Okay.
Yeah, that'll help. And aspirin is also used. I mean, it's doctors are like, "Well, take a baby aspirin,
Yeah.
so I can cause hemorrhaging in my intestine." Yeah, it'll get rid of some of that iron. I'm like, wait a minute, come on, there's got to be a better way than that.
Right. Well, I
So
think
I.
just clean aspirin, because I think the clean aspirin, I mean, I'm not even sure why I asked it. It just popped into my head because I was thinking
You.
about how to, because it's one of the ways to help move estrogen out of the tissues.
Oh, it is. Oh, I didn't know
At
that.
least that is what Ray
Yes.
Peet purports.
So then aspirin must lower oxidative stress to let the channel open up. That would be the, I'll take a look at that. So
Okay.
aspirin
But
relieves
it can
oxidative.
also cause histamine responses in people. Yeah. You know, it's funny because I talk to a lot of professionals, as you know, on my podcast, a lot of different doctors and people, and they're like, oh, I've never heard of that. And I'm like, come into my group because I seem to
Oh
get
yeah.
all the canaries in the coal mine in my group. And it's like, it's good, but it's also like, oh, you want to hear about that? It's going to be in my group. You've never seen somebody have complete disappearing of their estrogen dominant symptoms by using 800 milligrams of progesterone. Come into my group. Like, it's
Exactly.
just, yeah, but it doesn't mean it's right. I'm just saying, like, yeah, there are
Well,
definitely some outlying reactions.
you have a proving ground. And you can
Yes.
demonstrate, yeah. I mean, that's the beauty of that group,
Yeah.
and obviously helping lots and lots of people, which is beautiful. That I think that that's really intriguing about aspirin and estrogen. I never would have connected those two, but it makes sense intuitively once you okay, yeah. It's an anti-inflammatory, so it's maybe aspirin's lowering hydrogen peroxide, which is blocking the estrogen. I don't know. That'll be fun to
Interesting.
play
Just,
with,
yeah.
yeah.
Oh man, that was fun. That was
Yeah.
really good. I think that was very eye-opening. I always have moments where I'm like, oh, but this was like, I don't know. I'm always getting like this, the key fits in the hole and just click, all of a sudden I'm like, wait a minute. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think I appreciate your observation about the scalpel, because that's really what I'm trying to do is understand. See, I put, like I said, I put everything into an energy paradigm. And so when I discovered that retinol is critical for moving electrons from complex three to complex four, I went, wow. And it's a really big deal. It's like
Yeah.
a hammerling
I remember
2060.
you mentioning it. Yeah.
But then you find out that in 1925 and 1926, a guy named Montrose T. Burroughs, love that name.
It sounds like he smokes a pipe.
Yeah, really, right? Well, he gets his medical degree in 1909 from Hopkins, and then he goes up to the Rockefeller Institute. That should make the hair on the back of your neck stand on end.
Never a good thing.
Never a good thing. But he writes five articles proving that retinol deficiency causes cancer. Now, guess what the bleeding edge treatment for cancer is today? Iron chelation and retinol therapy.
Really? What, that's not the standard of care, though.
Not standard, but it's the cutting edge therapy. Because when you don't have retinol, you get the Warburg effect. What's the Warburg effect? There's oxygen, but it can't be activated, and so the body goes anaerobic. Why does the body not, why can't it activate the oxygen? Because there's no copper.
Right. An anaerobic body is an acidic inflamed body, lots of
Of course.
acidity, lots of pain, physical pain.
Absolutely.
Yeah, geez, that copper. And then, yeah, the sheep and then my hair. I don't want my hair to go black, but I do want more copper.
You do want more copper.
Can you
Yeah.
imagine? I turned 60 in like, 100 years, whenever that's going to happen. And then I like all of a sudden have all black hair. Morally said it would happen.
Exactly. You know, well, you're gonna have to focus on B5 and maybe some melatonin and some other stuff, but
So yeah, I do take melatonin. I take niacinamide now. I take I do a little bit of aspirin. I'm doing methylene blue, which I find
right.
super interesting. What do you
Yeah,
think about methylene blue?
I'm kind of on the fence about it. I'm fascinated by it. I think really what it's doing, in the same way that we have silverware, this needs to be polished, obviously. But we polish silverware with silver polish. Well, I think methylene blue is copper polish, and it's eliminating the oxidative stress on the copper And once it gets buffed up, then it can work better. I think that's really what it's doing.
Interesting. So I've been saying to people, and Keith Littlewood, he said it's really, really good for people that have had mold exposure because it helps to open up the detox pathways, but it also helps to upregulate thyroid. And so how do you think that happens? So it just polishes off the copper and allows it to be an antioxidant.
We could jump into a real nasty bunny trail, but I don't think the thyroid runs the body.
No, but it's not unimportant morally.
No, I know. I understand. I get that.
I never said it ran the body.
But it's the T3 hormone, the active hormone, is an oxygen sensor. Where does it hang out? In the mitochondria, complex 4.
Mm-hmm.
Is the oxygen being burned properly, activated into water? If it's not, what are all hormones? Signaling molecules. Sends a signal back to the liver and says, hey, we need more of that ceruloplasmin thing because we need more copper in the mitochondria. And ceruloplasmin is a choo-choo train for copper. And so the methylene blue, I think, is probably vitalizing the copper. And maybe it's helping to burn the oxygen better, which is easing the pressure on the thyroid. And the real important thing is, where's 90% of the conversion of T4 to T3 taking place?
Liver.
In the liver, right. And so if there's oxidative stress in the liver, it's going to put a lot of pressure on the thyroid.
Hmm.
So I think that it's helping. I don't know if it's getting to the root of the problem.
Yeah, no, I don't know if it is either. I mean, I think all of these things are just tools to help in some way. But
absolutely.
Yeah.
To me, the most important variable, Kitty, is does the individual believe in their body's natural ability to heal itself? And if they can accept that, if they can embrace that and internalize that, that gives them a tremendous advantage in this process of recovery. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people have doubt, have fear, and for good reason. They've done many things that have not worked, not knowing that their diet didn't support or provide the nutrients that the body uses to keep things in homeostasis.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the catch is.
Yeah. Gosh, my brain just is going on thinking, no parasite cleanse. What's the point? You got to address that iron in the gut. You got to address the amoeba, the iron in the spleen. And
copper is the antipathogen.
Mm-hmm.
It's the ultimate. It is Mother Nature's anti-parasitic.
Mm-hmm. On that note, thank you so much.
Absolutely. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I always feel like I'm not here really challenging you so much as I am asking questions and learning from you. And so sometimes I'm like, am I being a proper journalist right now or am I being a student? Because I don't know if I can do both. But with you, I'm always like, I feel like I assume the student position.
but do you feel comfortable? And do you feel that you are better off by the conversation?
Of course. In fact, I really feel like things click, especially today. They really click. Sometimes I get confused. And you know, I've told you this before. I just, my brain shuts down when we get into the transport A and transport B.
Oh, I know.
And I'm happy that I do that. And I'll tell you why. Because I know I'm not the only one. And
oh, absolutely.
The majority of my peeps are like, I can't. So I need, they need me to be like, okay, explain that better. That's why I assume the student position as well, because I feel like that's also what my people are going, can you ask him again what that means? You know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, but I do sometimes when I get off of our thing, I'm like, I should have challenged him about this. And then I never remember what that is. I think it's just because as a podcast interviewer, you want to be more of a journalist sometimes, and you want to be.
No. I get. Driver. I had that conversation earlier today, and it was a Uber journalist.
That person you were talking about, you mentioned
Ari Whitney,
who was
he's a wonderful guy.
Yeah,
he really he wanted to make sure he understood it so that he made sure that his clients understood. But the thing is, maybe this becomes at least an annual affair around our birthdays. That would be fun.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Because yours was October. What is it?
No, I'm November 15.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right.
And you're November 27.
Seven.
Okay.
And that makes you a Sagittarius as well. Or are you on the edge of Scorpio?
No, I'm Scorpio.
Okay. Yeah. Yes. That makes sense. That makes sense.
A digger. I'm a digger.
You're a digger. And I'm okay, let's do it. You want to go bungee jumping? Let's go. And then I feel I can push you.
I would jump out of an airplane 10 times before I'd go bungee jumping, but that's just me.
I've done them both.
Okay.
Says the Sagittarius.
That's great. Well,
anyway.
it's always a treat, and I appreciate the chance to have this relaxed dialogue. I just feel like it's just two old souls getting back together to say, let's kick the can some more. And I appreciate
chew the cud, as they say.
Yes.
Okay, cool. Well, I'm going to go down that American Indian rabbit hole with that medicine and the copper, because that's super interesting to me. I wonder what native herbs have a lot of copper in them.
That's the question. I don't know. And I would love to know.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll do some of that on my end too.
Especially here in North America. Wouldn't it be nice to know what those herbs are?
Yeah. I'll look them up. I'll look some up.
Yeah. Excellent.
All right, friend. Well, have a beautiful evening. Hello to Liz.
Thank you. You take care.
Okay.
And hi to Charlie, and we'll keep the dialogue going.
Okay. Love you.
Love you too. You take care.
I forgot to mention that I had tried to correct the speed on this podcast, and then I kind of made it a little bit fast on accident, and I couldn't return it back to its normal state. So I know I sound like a 13-year-old girl interviewing Morley. Morley sounds normal. I don't know how that happened, but anyway, if you were wondering why I sounded like a kid. All right, well, remember the HGG75 coupon that is in the show notes, the information for that, and Morley Robbins' book, Cure Your Fatigue, as well as his root cause protocol information. And I hope you learned as much as I did, friends. Yeah.